Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the Higher Education Tele Town Hall. My name is Tasha Berner-Horvath, and it's an honor to serve as your assembly member for Infinitas, Carlsbad, Oceanside Vista, and Camp Pendleton. You know, when I first took office, I never thought I would be leading during a worldwide pandemic, economic downturn, and really people struggling to get by. And since the governor declared the state of emergency due to the coronavirus in early March, you'll see that the legislature has time and again voted to support our state's coronavirus response, make sure all of our frontline workers have personal protective equipment. We have fought to completely protect and save our funding for education and higher education, which is really difficult during economic downturns, and really protect public health. And as the legislature adjourned session at the end of last month, here in North County, we've made some real progress, and as a result, some of our school campuses are already beginning to reopen. And so today's Teletown Hall is another fantastic opportunity for me to provide my constituents, that's you guys listening out there in the audience, with an in-depth discussion around the higher education topic in this new socially distanced environment we find ourselves in. I've invited two incredibly creative leaders. I'm happy to say they're both women in higher education who are strong leaders who possess a very wide lens when looking at the many aspects regarding campus reopenings. We have Dr. Ellen Neufeld from Cal State San Marcos, and we have Dr. Sunny Cook from MiraCosta. We're going to get to their self-introductions in a second, but before we get started, I wanted to do a little bit of housekeeping and remind everybody how our Teletown Halls work. Both of our guest speakers will talk a little bit about their role in keeping the public safe during the COVID-19 pandemic when it comes to the higher education learning environment, the reopening of campuses, and their partnerships in the community. Afterwards, we'll take some questions that you, our listeners, have submitted via email. To make sure our panel can be heard by everyone, all of our participants, that's you calling in, are in listen mode. If you'd like to ask a question, please email assemblymember.bernerhorvath. That's B-O-E-R-N-E-R, Horvath, H-O-R-V-A-T-H, at assembly.ca.gov. That's assemblymember.bernerhorvath at assembly.ca.gov. Any of those questions that are coming through that we haven't already received, we will put in our queue. We'll try to get to them today. If your question is not answered today, we'll try to cover it at a future Teletown Hall, or my staff will follow up with you directly. We're going to have we have these every week, probably about three a month. So I really appreciate our guests. And so I'd like to turn over right now to Dr. Ellen Neufeld for your introduction. Dr. Ellen.
Hello. Thank you for having me here. I am thrilled to be a part of this. I have been at Cal State San Marcos for just over a year. And just like you were saying, I think when I was thinking about what could happen in my first year as president here, a pandemic was certainly not on my radar, but so appreciative of being in the community where we work together and knowing that Cal State San Marcos is really a university of place serving North County and all of San Diego County, really, in moving forward. I came most recently here from Virginia, where I was a vice president at Old Dominion University. And I have largely spent my career focused on student success and student social mobility. So I am thrilled to be a part of this community, really thinking about ways to make sure that our students can have access as well as graduate from Cal State San Marcos. And about 8 out of 10 of our students tell us they stay in their region, stay in the region with their careers and their lives after graduation. So just honored to be a part of this. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Dr. Neufeld. And now, Sunny, would you like to take it off? And you could tell us if you want me to say Sunny or Dr. Cook or Ellen or Dr. Ellen. I can do all the names, so whichever one you prefer. Sunny?
You can call me Sunny if I can call you Tasha. How's that?
You know what? Everybody can call me by my first name because Berner Horvath is a big mouthful for a Teletown Hall. So why don't we do first names? That sounds good. Thank you.
Sure,
first. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you. You have a really exciting history as well.
Yes. So thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with both of you. My name is Sunny Cook, and I am working on my sixth year as president at MiraCosta College. And before that, I served for about 8 years at Grossmont College, which is also in San Diego County. I was president there. And so it's been a pleasure to be in North County and to work so collaboratively with the community members and particularly with CSU San Marcos and our feeder school districts. I am trained as a biologist, and I've done cancer research and came to teach at a community college as a biology faculty member in 1995. So I've been in this role and then traditionally in the academic side of the college. Always focused in community college because it's an equal access, open access organization, and it is really meant to provide educational opportunities for students in their communities, whatever point in their life they are. So students come to us with a variety of goals, not one goal. You know, some come to learn English, to take citizenship courses, to get ready for college. We have an adult high school that we operate. And also, you know, you know us for transfer education, preparing people to go to university and, you know, workforce degrees. So I'm delighted to be here. We work well with our partners. So Dr. Newfillen and I work very closely to make sure our institutions are collaborating because we share students and we even share some employees. So delighted to be here today.
Thank you, Sunny. That's really great. You know, I think one of the things when I go to Sacramento and I talk to my other colleagues, one of the things that makes our region so unique and so powerful is the ability to collaborate among many levels of government, among agencies. And I think you just, you know, hit the first point on the head. You know, MiraCosta and CSU San Marcos have been so collaborative in the region, both with our business communities, making sure that your graduates get jobs, to also recruiting from the community. I know Alex, who is one of my field reps, is actually a MiraCosta grad. So, you know, that makes me so happy that, you know, you produce really, really great students. So I really appreciate that. So we're going to jump into some questions. And I think probably the top question on our listeners' minds is, how has the fall semester changed under COVID? And what plans are you thinking about for spring semester? Are those set yet? Are you still debating? You know, I know this is, you know, with COVID-19, it's a disease that we're learning more about, and we kind of see trends, but there's a lot of missing information out there because I think we just don't know with this new virus. But to the extent that you could say anything, what does the fall semester look like, and what are kind of your thoughts for spring? Sunny, why don't we start with you, and then we'll go to Ellen.
Sure. So we are about, I just finished 3 weeks into our fall semester, and we welcomed some 31,000 students to a mostly online format. And so we have just a few classes that are on campus, and they are really hands-on kinds of essential worker training. So things like nursing, biotech, biomanufacturing. We have automotive technicians that are on campus. So things that are really not able to be converted to online, that's about all we have on campus. So we've been providing professional development for our faculty so that they can engage students in this online manner. And our classified professionals, our staff, have been providing all kinds of services, tutoring, mental health support, health services, counseling, financial aid, all of those things to our students in this remote format. We made the announcement this week that we will primarily stay in this mode through spring. And we make that decision early on. We learned a lot from these last few weeks of being open in this way. But we have to make that decision relatively early because our students have very busy lives, very complex lives, and we need to communicate with them early about what we're going to expect them to do for spring so that they can plan around their family obligations, their work, and all the other responsibilities that they have in their lives so that they can plan for what their educational journey is going to look like in spring.
I think that's a good point that they, you know, I think, you know, I have, my kids are not yet at the community college or at the bachelor's or master's or PhD level, but my daughter's starting back to elementary school on Monday, and it is true, you have to plan out, and if I'm thinking about that just for one child, thinking about adults going to MiraCosta or CSU San Marcos, they do have to plan ahead of what they're going to do, whether it's housing-related or job-related. So having that certainty is maybe, you know, what I'm hearing from you is that certainty of of knowing what the schedule is going to be is kind of is more paramount than the ability to come back in person. Is that like a correct summary there, Sunny?
Yeah, the ability to plan for what your life is going to look like in spring, given all the obligations you have. And, you know, we've just been watching what's happening across the nation with schools trying to open and colleges trying to open. And our first priority is keeping our students and our employees safe. And both CSU San Marcos and MiraCosta are very large employers. So what we do can either help slow the transmission of the disease or can help to speed that up. And we want to do our part in contributing to the numbers going down in San Diego so that we can continue to open. And so all of those things do go into that decision. And it's, you know, we don't take it lightly for sure.
Definitely. And I think that's a good connection. And Ellen, I'm going to throw this over to you in a second, but I think it's really interesting when we think about the businesses opening, closing, how difficult that is, that one of the best things we could do is help control the spread. And so if there are ways where we can, you know, sufficiently teach our young adults, our workforce remotely, then maybe that's worth the trade-off to keep those businesses that hopefully will be hiring them open. So I think that's a really good point, Sunny. Ellen, how is it at San Marcos, CSU San Marcos? Is it similar? I mean, what is the dorm situation there even?
It is very similar. We have about 8% of our classes on campus. Similar to what Sunny referred to in nursing simulation clinical labs, labs on campus, and we are housing, usually we house close to 2,000 students. We're housing 250, and those students that are living with us are students where we're their primary home, or maybe they have they're from out of the region and they have a class on campus and they need the housing, and if they live on campus, they have their own bedroom and their own bathroom to, again, make sure that we keep transmission to a minimum. So they are probably have more space than they could have ever dreamt of having if you lived on a college campus or if anybody has memories of that. And as we go into the spring, just like MiraCosta, will largely look the same. The CSU announced last week that we would stay largely virtual for the spring semester. And what I've appreciated, you talked about the partnership, is that we've stayed in contact with both MiraCosta and Palomar College, so that the three of us, knowing that we're in North County, have been able to connect and coordinate to a great extent. But just as Sunny said, helping make sure that people have the opportunity to plan what next semester will look like has been very important. And what we heard is the sooner we could make that announcement, the better for people moving forward in their lives. And so we're being as creative as we can, from shipping lab kits to homes where possible, to distributing technology and things like that. We do have a computer lab on campus that is open and monitored for social distance and very closely watched. It's in our union, making sure anybody that doesn't have access to technology or internet can still be able to connect to that needed technology. But for the most part, our campus is largely virtual, just like MiraCosta.
Yeah, I think it's a great, you know, aspect there of who still needs to come on campus. You know, we've dealt with that a lot at the K-12 level of, you know, how do you have access for those who either don't have internet at home or just don't have an environment that supports that. So it's great to know that if students need it, they can be able to come on campus and access those resources and that technology. But that would be, I'm thinking back to, it was a long time ago, my college years, but thinking back to what that would have been like to get my, you know, college chemistry kits delivered at home. It's a funny thing to think about with the practicalities of there's like the high level and there's the practicalities of that. Ellen, could you tell us a little bit, what classes still take place on campus? Sunny, you were telling us it was a lot of the kind of essential worker training, the nursing program and some other stuff. But what's going on at CSU San Marcos?
So which classes are happening there? Nursing, our nursing clinicals, as well as upper division lab courses in biology, biochemistry, chemistry, and some of our hands-on work right in the labs. So any class that is on campus has some type of active learning component to it. And it's about 8% of our total classes that we have. Even then, those classes are not all coming at one, you know, it's not the same number of students that we'd have in the fall. So it may be that a group comes on Monday and a second group comes on Wednesday. And the class in itself may have on-campus components, but may not fully happen on campus, just the experiential parts of the course when the student comes on. So as Sunny was referring to earlier, trying to limit the spread, trying to make sure that it's absolutely necessary if somebody's coming on campus and to further their learning, what we have available, and then to make sure, I think I've never seen so much plexiglass in my career, to make sure that there's the right barriers and appropriate. And we have three places where for distribution of PPE on campus, where we had a group that worked to centrally order and put those out and available. I think it's like we said when we opened, this is something of all the things we thought we'd lead through, this is one I wouldn't have foreseen. But it's just amazing how our faculty and staff and students have risen to the challenge.
That is, and it is amazing. I was just talking to a friend on the phone the other day, and they were saying that, like, there's no way somebody was like, oh, well, let's get some plexiglass dividers. And the person said, there's no plexiglass dividers left in San Diego County. You have to order them outside. So I guess we've been very good at, drawing down our supplies and reserves of plexiglass here in San Diego County. Yeah, but, you know, we have to keep people safe. Sunny, is there anything you want to add about what programs are taking place at your AmeriCosta campuses?
No, I think we'll continue just as we are this fall with those things that must be on campus. And everything else it has been able to be translated. I think even our theater program is learning remotely, and they're performing remotely. So they're going to have a play that they do, and it will be recorded remotely. People will be performing it remotely, but it'll be all put together and it will be free to the public and sent out, because we know that, you know, particularly our seniors and people that are connected to us through our performances, our dance, our theater, our music, our symphony, are missing that. And so we're going to try in every way possible to give the students the experience of doing those things still, even in this remote format, but then connecting to our community as well, you know, given these circumstances.
What a great idea. Remind me to when you're doing that, and we can help boost that over our page, because I think you're right. I think when we think about all of our AmeriCosta, we think about San Marcos, we think about all of our education institutions, there's such a rich culture around it, you know, and really gathering spots. So the fact that you've been able to, I can't even imagine what like a play, a virtual Zoom play would look like. So I'm fascinated about what that will be. But, of course, leave it up to you guys. I think you're some of the most creative higher education institutions in the state. So I always have bragging rights in Sacramento about you guys. So I really appreciate that.
We love that. But
it is. It's true. I always tell people what you guys are doing. And it's amazing because, you know, I think I think it's what I was saying at the beginning. Both of you are tied in very, very closely to the community and very closely to the job market. And I think that's exceptional. And I don't know if all higher education institutions really are. I think shows that why we're having such good job growth in the area, at least before COVID. So we've talked a little bit about coming back to campus. Obviously, one of the things, even if you have very few people on campus, are your plans for testing and mitigation efforts aside from the plexiglass dividers that you have in place. Ellen, do you want to go into what you're doing besides plexiglass and PPE? Is there any testing, or how is faculty dealing with that, you know?
We are very fortunate. We partnered with the county, and so the county is using our Viasat Engineering Pavilion as a county testing site. So that gave great access to the university for our faculty, staff, and students. And the county is working with our medical director to help us. So they do any, our faculty, staff, and students can get their testing there whether needed because there's suspicion of a case or whether they just want to be tested. And then we, our medical director on campus gets the reports if we have any issues with the campus population. We have a fall website with a dashboard that lists our active cases on campus and what's happening there to the point we have to protect privacy, but what's happening to a point of going through the process of letting anyone know or that's been exposed that needs to know. And I know every day I hold my breath, but so far it's worked very well, and I've really got to give just great praise to the partnership with the county in this for us. They help us with the contact tracing, and then we pick up for the campus piece. We're partnered with the testing. And so far, as we're finishing our third week of school, that has really worked out well for us. And we just really appreciate the county and all they have. As far as I mentioned earlier, for the residence halls, we made sure that every resident had their own bathroom and bedroom so that they, you know, themselves would live in a situation where they wouldn't pass COVID easily onto a roommate living in the same room. And then everyone on campus, of course, is wearing masks, protective gear, anything. And then our faculty that are in the labs have the face shields and to make sure that they have an extra layer of protection as they're teaching and doing that. So every lab has a protocol, every classroom has a protocol, and then we're partnering with the county for testing and contact tracing.
Well, that sounds very thorough. So I know if I ever need to go for whatever reason on CSU San Marcos campus, I know I'm going to be very safe. Sunny, how is it at Maricosta?
And you can be tested here too. So there we go.
Yes, I know. So that's the one thing. So I don't know if you guys listened to our testing town hall we did with Nick Maccioni from the county. And the entire town hall, he was teasing us, saying, "Oh, there's going to be a spot in North County where you could do drop-in testing," and he wouldn't tell us where it was, and then it was announced the next day. So, yes, we made sure we highlighted that. But I think it is important, you know, when you think about access to healthcare and, you know, people going back to work or going back to school, and they need to have same-day testing where they could go in. I think that's super important that they know that, you know, they could go to CSU San Marcos and they can get tested. And I think we've partnered with the county for a lot of things too. And, you know, I think when I look at the response throughout the state, there's a reason San Diego, especially after this summer spike, we really got it under control. And we're one of the best counties in the state. You look at some of the other counties, and it's really heartbreaking how much loss they're going through.
We have very much appreciated the partnership and proactivity with the county.
Yeah, they're great. Sunny, how are things at Maricosta? Testing,
you know,
tracking, tracing, all?
Yeah, I just want to second that. I think Dr. Wooten and her team are amazing to work with. They do particular forums for education, higher education, and they work with us to, you know, develop reopening plans. They've just been really good in guiding us through this time. We are not doing it this time testing on campus, but we are doing many of the same precautions that are required in our opening plan. As you just heard from CSU San Marcos, we, you know, have all of our employees have to be temperature and symptom checked before they come onto campus, as do our students. Anybody that's entering a building will have to go through that process. We do have a lot of plexiglass in places where people may even remotely come near each other so that they can feel comfortable and they can be protected. In our lab setting, very much the same precautions that you already heard. So we have been very fortunate. We've only had one case this fall that was reported, and we worked with the county, and they were impressed with the precautions we had in place so that there was not a danger to others. So, you know, it's going really, you know, every day you cross your fingers, you hold your breath, but things are going really remarkably smoothly given what we're trying to navigate.
Yeah, and it is, and I think, you know, it's when I think about it, I think about it both from a policy perspective and a budget perspective. You guys have put in all these things in place, and you've worked with the county. Our county's been really good. Our county's been very bold on its leadership. I'm very proud of them, by and large. And so when you think about the financial impact, though, to the budget of all these extra measures and the plexiglass and the PPE and how you're going about it, what are your first level concerns, and maybe what are your short term concerns, or you think that there's opportunities, and then the long term concerns and opportunities. So, Sunny, do you want to start, and then we'll go over to Ellen?
You know, I have to say we are very thankful for the CARES Act funding that came from the federal government for two reasons. Half of the money that our college received was to go directly to emergency grants for students to support them in their time of need if they'd lost their jobs or were having difficulty. And so we very quickly got those dollars into the hands of our students that had needs as early as spring. You know, as soon as we could after those dollars came in, continued through the summer. We have another allocation that we'll be giving to students in the fall. So we've tried to focus on those that have need that are related to COVID and need in general. I will say we have had some expenses, and some of the CARES Act funding has been helpful in that way. The state has provided for community colleges some personal protective equipment and supplies that has been also very helpful. So while we have been out, we've had to buy supplies, we've had to buy plexiglass, we've had to buy, wall mount thermometers and, you know, all those things. It could have been much worse had there not been, some planning and backfilling for these things from both the federal level and the state level. So feel very, very fortunate in that way. And we're trying, of course, to get as much support to our students as we possibly can through existing means, but also through these emergency grants for them.
And I think that's just such a great, I think it's why America, one of the reasons why America is such a great community college is that student-centered approach of saying, like, can we get these emergency grants to these students to really help them out through this time so they can continue education. I mean, we look and there's going to, you know, we know there's going to be sectoral unemployment, and I was really happy to co-author with our jobs and economic development chair, Sabrina Cervantes, AB 1457, which will help pilot at our community colleges exactly what I think you're already doing, Sunny, which is these job retraining.
Right.
You know, within the essential workforce, and can it really helps when you're using that money to support the students who need the retraining and they need to continue their education. So I think that's really important. Ellen, let me know. Would you like to chime in on this?
Sure. I apologize. My call dropped for a moment. So we're talking about the financial issues that go along with it.
Yes, so, yeah, exactly. So the financial impact of COVID on CSU San Marcos.
With investing in the right PPE as well as some of the other cuts that are coming in, and we've also not having students live in housing or parking on campus, probably the financial impact will be somewhere between $15 or $20 million for us overall in the coming year, in the coming academic year. But at the same time, you know, when we think about moving forward and some of the positives, I see innovation every day. You know, we have a faculty member who was highlighted in Forbes for her gaming. She had turned her kinesiology class into a gaming class where students get points. And so there's innovation happening every day that I think will take us to new levels post-COVID. At the end of the day, it's about making sure we're educating the students and working together. And that's what I've seen with our faculty and staff. But we are working one step at a time to work through the financial picture and hurdles that obviously no one could have foreseen coming or unexpected. But with good planning and an innovative spirit, you know, we'll walk through it one step at a time, and I think we'll have many innovations that will put us in a better place on the other side.
Well, I love that optimism. I hadn't even thought about the fact that you're with so many students not on campus in housing, and
yes,
you know, maybe doubles and triples now being single rooms, about that loss. So thank you for kind of raising that to my awareness. But I do agree that you guys are both very agile, innovative institutions, and I know you'll stretch your dollars as far as they can go. You know, one of the things that I have heard just, you know, from the seniors and juniors in our communities is, you know, they're anxious as to what, you know, they've kind of worked towards college, and or whether it's MiraCoast or CSU, San Marcos, or somewhere else, they've worked towards that for years and years and years and years and years. And then now they come up to it, and they're looking at such a different picture. And one of the things they have a lot of anxiety about is around the admission process. So I think we might go into depth about this in a future town hall, but can you tell me, Ellen, and we can start with you and then go to Sunny, how has the admission process changed under COVID-19? And what are some of the new practices that maybe people applying to both of your schools may have to think about?
So I think one of the things that is on the top worry of many incoming students' mind is when you're preparing for college, one of the things that you learn from your guidance counselors and so forth in the schools is that you're going to need to take a standardized test. In this area, it's usually the SAT, but it could be the ACT. And obviously, access to that testing is not readily available. And in the CSU, we're suspending the testing for the coming year. So students can apply without worrying about the test and to take a bit of stress off, because there's enough stress in this moment now. So the main thing is they, you know, have their A through G requirements, and that they keep their grades up, and that they are, you know, that they can go ahead and submit their application without without that test and not worry about or stress about the fact that it's not easy or to find access to the testing right now.
I think that's so great, Toa. I hope all of our incoming students and high school juniors and seniors have heard that, you know, people understand that it's a worldwide pandemic and some of these standardized tests can't be done. Sunny, what has changed at MiraCoSta?
I would say we've always been an open access institution, so we have a relatively simple application process that students fill out. We do not expect students to take the SAT, ACT, or any of those admissions tests, so we've never looked at those things. A high school diploma or GED is fine for entry level, and so you can go to the MiraCoSta.edu site and look at admission, and it's very easy to complete that. It is the same statewide application for all community colleges, so that application can be filled out once and can be used to apply to a number of different institutions. I would say the one thing that was a little bit of a surprise was, once we opened up our admission to dual enrollment students and high school students, we had a lot of interest from high school students that were thinking they may be online this fall and wanted to complete some college classes. So we've had really a kind of a record high. You know, some faculty have told me that half of their classroom now consists of high school juniors and seniors that are using this opportunity to get ahead and take some dual enrollment in college and get college credits under their belt. So it's been a nice sort of secondary impact of COVID and not really knowing about how your fall semester may look as a high school student. So it's been a positive.
That's a great aspect. I actually completed 2 years or a year and a half at UC Riverside while I was in high school. You know, I bet there are a lot of kids that, you know, and my struggle was like, how do I have classes that fit into my school day? But now with school days quite flexible and online, you know, I can see that there's more time and need not driving places, but it makes it more accessible to students to explore. And I think the more we explore when we're younger about all the different options that are out there, the better we're using our financial resources. You know, for some of us, it's limited financial resources go to college in the area that we want to be at. So that's a great, you know, kind of silver lining to this whole process. So what innovative programs or delivery models has your institution explored due to COVID-19? So what are you doing differently now in terms of teaching and reaching students? I think you touched on it in your introduction, but maybe you could go a little bit in depth in about that. Sunny, we'll start with you and then head over to Ellen.
Sure. I think our you know, we have had a strong background in online education in MiraCosta for some time. So about 25% of our students were choosing to take online classes even before the pandemic. So they would do that to fit their busy lives, to be able to go to school when their kids were asleep and that kind of thing. So we had a strong foundation in online learning. We've certainly expanded that so that we've provided lots of professional development for how to engage students in an online format is very different than in a classroom. Good teaching is good teaching, you know, wherever you are. But there are some techniques and things that we've been sharing. Faculty have mentored each other. We've offered lots of different sessions of professional development. I will tell you, we were moving to becoming a paperless organization prior to COVID, but this really sped us up. When we are trying to approve forms and purchasing and stuff like that from a variety of different, you know, cities or locations, we've implemented technology behind the scenes that allow us, it's a new, you know, enterprise system that allows us to remotely 24 hours a day do the processing that we need to do. Our employees can get to the information they need 24/7 on their phones. And we're doing that same thing for students. So we have chatbots that are available where students can ask questions and they don't have to wait for someone to answer the email or see the phone call. They get a response immediately. And they have really taken well to that. We've also upgraded our website and provided more information there. I think Ellen also touched on the science labs. I was just looking at photos of the kinds of kits that our chemistry, biology, physics, biotech students were receiving in the mail. This has been a huge additional cost, but this has been remarkable what students have been able to accomplish in this environment. And then I would say we invested also in using online forms of tutoring, mental health services, and those kinds of things. And I will say one of the things I'm the most proud of because I've been able to enjoy this is really engaging in clubs through an online format. We have continued to support particularly our most marginalized students through these clubs and formats, student life and leadership, that I've just really been impressed with how we're continuing to engage and support students in those ways. So let me stop there because I know Ellen's got additional ideas to share as well.
Oh no! I think you said
that's fantastic,
it well,
Ellen. Go ahead. Yeah, take it away, Ellen.
Right. I always admire what's happening at MiraCosta and Sunny. There's so many great things there that you've got to be proud of. We had workshops through our faculty center for our faculty this summer for looking at how they would teach online this fall. And I think I mentioned earlier, Dr. Tumay Tuner on our campus was highlighted in Forbes. She converted a lab section of her motor control and learning course to an online module and incorporated gamification and for students to keep them engaged in the learning and virtual learning. And it's just one great example of innovation in what our faculty are doing on our campus. And, you know, I'm sure that that course is going to stay part of her curriculum from here to come. But also, the student services are so important. And Sunny mentioned the chat bots and making sure that we're able to really pull our student services together in a virtual way. And so I think it's brought a collaboration across the campus with different areas of service really coming together to make sure we're putting things out there for our students and bringing them forward. One area I wanted to highlight is we have a new innovation hub, which really started to come to life this year. And so here we have a brand new physical space, and then we went virtual, and so we thought, now what does that mean? But actually, over the summer, they were doing just what an innovation hub should do. They were doing workshops with K-12 schools with our students and faculty to look at how we could support our K-12 partners in virtual learning for the fall. So our Innovation Hub has really stepped up to look at what are the needs in the time of COVID and how can we at CSU San Marcos be an impact in the community and innovation. And we're going to keep doing that. One of the things that I think will stay with us is how we help innovate not only on our campus, but in our community for time to come, and what I think of as a COVID-integrated world, and our innovation hub, and their work with the K-12 schools this summer, I think, is a good example of that.
I think that's an excellent example, and really just, you know, it's remarkable to me, you know, it's only been 6 months, but to pivot all these services online, it's not only the delivery of education and learning, but it's delivery of all the services that go along with it. That's really like a superhuman feat. So congratulations to both of you for really making that happen. But, you know, maybe you could also share some of the unique challenges that you've encountered among your students and how you've pivoted to meet these needs that formerly you were not having to address before COVID. So, Ellen, I don't know if you want to start us off, and then we'll move over to Sunny.
Yeah. You know, when we think about the prolonged pandemic, I think it shines a light on inequities that have been there for quite a while, but really shines a light on those, especially when we think about our first-generation college students, low-income college students, and we've had students that are experiencing, you know, job loss, or their families have experienced job loss, and so the idea about staying in school when you have when you have a different family situation, whether it's your job or your parents' jobs or a spouse's income, it really created some hardships that we needed to think about. And in the spring, they were really coming up, you know, to our faculty right in the classroom or to our Cougar Care Network, which we have on campus for any student in need. And so one of the things where the community really came together is we raised over $130,000 through our foundation board for a student relief fund, partnering with our student leaders in the ASI, our student leadership, to really get grants out to students as needed. And many times, and I think Sunny might have mentioned this earlier, many times it was about paying an electric bill or paying the rent as much as paying the tuition so that students didn't have to stop out. That has really been one of the biggest challenges is making sure that we're caring about the whole student, as well as our staff and faculty, and the changing world that's happening to all humans across our world right now. Another area where our Associated Students Incorporated really came together is we've had a food pantry, and that looked as if it was going to be closing down, but they created a mobile food pantry, and so our student union has a place for them to store, and they can come in, and certain days of the week the mobile food pantry goes out, so that people can come by safely and pick up food if they need it, our students can. It's been day by day being creative with the generosity of so many to make sure that we're not only meeting the needs of the students in the classroom, but making sure that we're meeting their needs so that they can be in the classroom. And I think that's really been one of the biggest challenges is it's not for everybody, right? It's not just happening in our job or in our classroom. It's happening all around us, and our lives are being integrated right into whatever we're trying to do. And so helping everybody through that really makes a difference. I want to just say how much the CARES Act funding meant. We distributed $8 million in funds to our students, and it meant the world to help keep them in school as well.
Definitely, Sunny. How is that for you?
I would say on before COVID, about 70% of our students were on, you know, some sort of federal financial aid or, were on our Free Promise program. And so I want to underscore that, you know, the disease itself has really disproportionately impacted elderly and people of color, and you see the inequities that really have, even been exacerbated by this because, you know, some of our students were the first ones to lose their job in restaurants and movie theaters, and so dealing with those issues has been a significant focus of ours. And as Ellen mentioned, the technology, I think I was surprised at how many students didn't have regular access to technology, the laptop itself, the Wi-Fi, internet access. And so we were their connection to that. We had the labs, the open labs, the places where they could be. And so our first priority when we were making that quick switch to online was to make sure those students had a laptop and had hotspots or access to the internet. And so, you know, it was partnerships. It was our foundation raising funds immediately so that by the time we opened online, we handed out over, 500 computers and hotspots and things like that. I think we've invested some $800,000 of technology support for students to either have or borrow. Every laptop on the campus is loaned out or is being used by employees or students. So I think that was a significant challenge. Meeting their financial needs was a significant challenge. And then if you layer over what's happened over the summer, with the racial violence that has occurred in our nation, we are investing as a campus in becoming a racially just campus. And that means that a student, no matter their race, has the same probability of completing a degree, no matter what their race is. And so we've embarked on professional development around becoming an anti-racist organization. And so we're reading books together, we're having forums and discussion groups. So I think the inequities that have been exacerbated by this are really coming to the fore and are forcing us as institutions to become better as a result of this. And I know we'll have a chance to talk about, what are our students going to expect in the future from higher ed organizations. And that's going to be a challenge for us to anticipate and provide the variety of services that I think students are going to want in the ways they're going to want to receive that the services.
I think that is very profound that you've been able to pivot. And, obviously community colleges have the benefit of always having been inclusive, but to really put, a metric on it and say, we seek to graduate people regardless of your cultural or ethnic background at the same rate, that's a pretty powerful statement and an excellent goal. That it's very encouraging that you're taking the lead on that. I think that's super important. When we look at some of the educational specific challenges at the institutions, what have your institutions undergone? Sunny, we can start with you and then move to Ellen. And you can also include in that, because this is probably going to be our last question, include in that any other updates you want to provide us.
I just want to say that I wake up every day thankful that I do not have sororities or fraternities or dormitories on campus. So I don't have the same challenges that our university partners do, and I'm very much aware of that in my institution that has been one less thing to worry about. So I want to say that right off the bat. I think as I look forward, I'm excited about the ingenuity that our faculty and staff have exhibited. They are relentless in trying to find solutions to problems, and I know that this is the same at CSU San Marcos. We have risen to this moment because there's not a choice. We have to serve our students in these circumstances, and we have to help them do their best. And so even things like remote internships, if we're going to prepare students for the workforce of tomorrow, well, many of them are working online, and so we've even pivoted some of our internships to online internships. And so we're trying to be as creative as we can be and maintain the quality of our learning environment. One of the things that our cities came to us and said is that they expressed a need for more social workers in our community. That was before COVID. And after COVID, I think that need is even more significant. There are some 400 annual openings that are in San Diego County alone for social workers. And so we have launched a social worker program. This is the first in California to be an associate degree that will also transfer that is fully online. So meeting a need in this unique circumstance and now becoming the first to offer something online, those are the kinds of things that are happening in these circumstances. And our Small Business Development Center has just been relentless in helping small businesses to connect with dollars and loans and connecting them with the work that they can do for the federal government and still do contracting and bringing in revenue so they can pay their employees. So those are the kinds of things that I really am proud of, and I know we will continue to evolve as we move forward.
And that, I just want to chime in. That is just so profound, you know. As you both know, I work a lot on the homelessness issue and the mental health issue. And one of the things we struggle with is having enough social workers who really understand the fundamental issues around mental and behavioral health, whether that's in our adult population, the homeless population, or kids who've experienced adverse childhood experiences. It's becoming more and more clear, I think, the more data we get in on it, that there are things we could do. And it kind of starts with having a trained workforce on it. So it's so exciting to hear that you're having this program. Congratulations for being the first in the state. I love hearing things in my district for the first in the state.
Thank you.
I get to brag about. I'm like collecting bragging rights, like, on this call. I'm going to have to write them down and like post them on Facebook so my other assembly members can be jealous. But with that, I will turn to Ellen. And with you, can you share some unique challenges that you've encountered amongst what are some of the educational specific challenges that your institution has undergone, and any other updates you want to close out with?
You know, I think the challenge has been, and Sunny said it well, and I was on a panel with her probably about a month ago, where she said, you know, if any of us had looked around to see could we have done what we did in such a short amount of time, would we have said it was possible? And we probably would have said no. So every day the challenge is understanding that change upon change, and adapting to it. So that is really the big piece, is that it's ever changing, and one solution today is not the solution of tomorrow, as COVID is choosing the timeline, and we're constantly learning and evolving from it. You know, in the education-specific world, to Sunny's point about fraternities and sororities are living on campus, you know, one of the big challenges educationally is a lot of the ways we learn is gathering together, and every day trying to figure out how we bring that into a new virtual environment where we still have the critical thinking and we're still helping people gain the skills they need for the future. That is really one of the big keys that it constantly have to think about.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you both for your time and both for leading during this really, really difficult time. You know, this is unprecedented, and you know, really leading your institutions, making sure you're connected to the community, serving your students. It's just really remarkable how well you have done in the face of adversity. So thank you. Thank your leadership teams. Thank your faculty. Thank your students. It's really encouraging. So as we wind up this town hall, I think we've learned so much about how higher education campuses are ensuring our safety during these unprecedented times. Again, thank you both for your time. And I'd like to turn over to you, looking at the time, you each get 1 minute for any final comments, advice to our listeners, parents, students, potential future incoming students, existing students, what they should know before we close out today. I think I started with Ellen earlier, so I'm going to start with Sunny now, and then we're going to move to Ellen. Thank you so much.
Well, first, let me just say thank you. You are a great champion for our community and for our educational institution. So I just want to thank you very much for your fierce advocacy on our behalf. I would say to anyone listening, you have some gems of higher education in your community that are all about their community, all about the communities they serve and the schools that feed into them, and really are here to support the community and are relentless in their availability. They want to serve the community, all those in the community that seek a higher education, and we're doing everything we can to do that in the best way possible. We will always do that. So please know that you are very fortunate to have such great public higher education institutions in your community.
That's great. Ellen, any final comments?
I would just add on to what Sunny said is and I know I can speak for both MiraCosta and CSUSM. We're here to educate and serve our region. And whether there's COVID or whatever comes our way, we are planning to move forward and to do that and to educate and to help everybody not only have access but to complete their educational journey and be able to serve the community. So COVID or not, we're going to be here, we're going to educate, and we're going to keep moving forward.
I love that spirit. COVID or not, we're here to educate. We're here to help the region move forward, create the talent pipeline of the future. I think that's just such a great closing thought for us all to walk away from today's Teletown Hall with. So as a reminder, I know we've been really good about this, but let's be prepared to do our part to curb the spread of the coronavirus. Remember, it's actually come down to kind of three things. Let's wash our hands. Let's keep 6-foot distance from those outside our household unit, and let's wear our masks when we're out and about. Those three things are not hard. They're not difficult. They might be require some adjustment, but that's how we keep our education institutions teaching. That's how we keep our businesses thriving. That's how we keep everything going in this face of really this very dangerous virus. So as always, my office is here to assist and welcomes your question, comments, and concerns. If you submitted a question and we didn't get it covered today, I will either try to cover it in a future town hall or my staff will get back to you individually. My goal is always to provide the highest quality of public service on state-related matters. And if you have any questions that you think of later that were not asked today, please go ahead and email my staff, alex.kiwan at asm.ca.gov. She is my field rep for youth education and higher education, as well as many other things. Or you could call my district office. We're answering all the calls. So we are all working remotely, and our number is 760-434-7605. Any links or resources today that were mentioned will be available to review at your convenience on my website. We're also going to have a recording of this Teletown Hall on that website at www.a76.asmdc.org. That's a76.asmdc.org. And please watch your email inboxes and social media for my next Teletown Hall. So thank you again. Thank you, Sunny. Thank you, Ellen. You're amazing leaders. Thank you so much for all you do for our communities. And have a great evening. Stay safe, North County.